When the Exxon Valdez ran aground in 1989, the only technology available for keeping oil from reaching the shoreline was the containment boom, a temporary floating barrier shaped like a long stuffed sausage intended to concentrate oil in thicker surface layers so that skimmers, vacuums, or other collection methods could remove large amounts of oil effectively. Booms are effective in calm water, but as wave height increases, oil or other contaminants can easily wash over the top of the boom and render it useless. Even in relatively calm waters, if booms are not anchored in place, they can wash ashore, rendering them both useless and an additional burden on cleanup. A full 20 years after the Exxon Valdez spill, when the Deepwater Horizon exploded in the Gulf, I assumed that our technology for containing oil must have vastly improved. During my drive down to the Gulf, beginning on July 24th, 9 days after the Deepwater Horizon well was finally capped, I listened to National Public Radio whenever I could. The oil spill was not the top story anymore, and when it was mentioned at all during the hourly news, it was in the context that the danger was over. The official stance was that Corexit, the dispersant BP was spewing all over the Gulf, was taking care of most of the oil, and the hot temperatures and the Gulf waters were making the rest evaporate. This was clearly and obviously magical thinking, as if they imagined the 4.9 million barrels of oil was being raptured up for all eternity. Any story about the spill also mentioned the massive cleanup BP was conducting. I hoped visiting in person would reassure me that maybe Drew Whelan's reports on the American Birding Association blog might be a little exaggerated and that the situation wasn't nearly as bad as I'd feared. When I arrived, I connected with Sean Carey, a wonderful bird photographer from Massachusetts. Since we were both there on our own without sponsors or anyone helping defray our costs, we decided to pool our resources. We chartered a boat into Barataria Bay on July 27th, took a small charter plane above Nesting Islands on July 28th, and visited Grand Isle State Park on July 29th. And just like that, any illusions I had that BP was using cutting-edge technology to clean up their mess, or that their cleanup efforts were massive or intense, evaporated into thin air the way their oil supposedly was doing. BP's only tools to keep oil from vulnerable islands, many with nesting colonies of thousands of birds, were those old-fashioned containment booms. The ones we saw were orange or yellow plastic, which were supposed to stop the oil, or white sorbent ones that were supposed to sop up at least some of the oil. As any child who has ever played with a toy boat knows, floating things move about on the surface with even a slight current. Much of the boom we saw was not in the bay at all, but had washed to shore along with the oil. The booms were out there to prevent oil from reaching the shoreline, but surely there must have been a good backup plan to clean the shore if the oil did reach it? Nope. At Grand Isle State Park, the one place we saw a cleanup operation, prisoners on work release had been brought to the park armed with nothing but small shovels and plastic bags. They wore plastic gloves, but not one of them had been issued any kind of mask or other protection from noxious fumes. Armed guards kept us from getting close to them. From our vantage point away from the beach, I wasn't smelling oil, but after 15 or 20 minutes, I started feeling woozy. Of course, I could walk away whenever I needed if I felt sick. Work release prisoners did not have that option. Many of BP's paid employees who got sick from so much exposure to the fumes sued the company. But BP dragged that case out for over a decade, and the employees ended with nothing. I learned later that BP's cleanup crews were prohibited from digging any deeper than 6 inches into the sand, even if there was lots of oil. Probably to adhere to at least one OSHA regulation, they did not put more than a few shovelfuls of sand into any of the huge plastic bags that were then tossed onto a front loader. There was just one small team working the whole length of beach that we saw. None of the armed guards or other BP contractors or employees we saw would answer our questions. On July 29th, we went to a secluded part of the park with a courageous park naturalist. The beach there had been oiled a month earlier during a storm surge in the aftermath of Hurricane Alex. There were still huge, visible deposits of oil on the surface, and when she dug her hands into the sand, she pulled up huge globs of thickly oiled sand extending more than 2 feet below the surface. That part of the park, set aside mostly as a wildlife preserve, has very few visitors, so it received absolutely no cleanup. Imagine any American citizen murdering, directly or by criminal negligence, 11 human beings and causing massive damage to private and public lands. In some states, that person would be subject to the death penalty, and in even the most lenient states, that person would get a very long sentence in prison and have to relinquish most or all of their personal assets. The Supreme Court grants corporations personhood as far as a great many rights go, while never granting them personhood as far as their responsibilities go. With only a minor speed bump in the immediate aftermath of the spill, BP is now as profitable as ever, and we human beings and the environment we depend upon are in as much jeopardy as ever. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.